This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 94, recorded on July 9th, 2018. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and joining me this week, as always, is Let's Go Tribe writer, Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm pretty good, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing great. You were telling me before the show that you're really into RBIs now. That's interesting to know. Do you also like pitcher wins?
Pitcher wins are nothing compared to RBIs. What do you got to do to win a game? Just drive in runs. It's a much more advanced statistic than wins.
It's very complicated.
You have to do. But I was at that game the other night where Mark Reynolds hit 10 of them in one game. I was like, well, this is impressive. This is the best game I've ever seen by an offensive player. It probably actually was, now I think about it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. But, I remember they were talking about Mark Reynolds earlier in the season. Like, everybody was just baffled that he didn't sign anywhere. I still don't think it's that remarkable that Mark Reynolds didn't sign anywhere, but it's neat that he's doing so well.
Oh, yeah, I just finished an article about him. He's having a great year. I can't decide if he's a different player this year than maybe in past years, or if it's just a streak thing, or who knows, but I don't know, 40 games in or whatever, and he's having the best season of his career. So, I mean, he had that, remember, what was it, 2013, he had that run with the Indians for like a month. I think it was, 2013, yeah. In April, he was just God, but then he just kind of fell into a hole. He does that a lot. But this has been kind of a more sustained being goodness sort of a thing. And again, having a game where you go 5 for 5 with 2 home runs and 10 RBIs really helps buoy the stats a little bit.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt too much. It's pretty nice.
Kind of like Francisco Lindor and his 4 for 5 night. Was it only 2 for 4? Was it only 2 for 4? It was. Because he had 2 home runs. One was a grand slam. That's the 8th most RBIs by an Indian. You know who has the most RBIs in a single game by an Indian? I just looked this up just now.
It's either Tomey or Hafner, I'm sure.
Two men, Lonnie Chisenhall and Chris James.
Oh, that game
Chisenhall
in Texas.
Did it back in the game in Texas, yes. Yeah. And then Chris James against Oakland back in 91. It went 4 for 5. Of course, everyone does. a couple of dingers in there, and then some more singles, I guess, from what I understand. 20-6, the Indians won that one.
So they know Chris James, but the Indians are going to be sending 5 players to the All-Star game. Lindor, Kluber, Brantley, Ramirez are all kind of obvious. This is their second year in a row all going. And then Trevor Bauer is the new face, replacing Justin Verlander, who's going to pitch on Sunday. Which is also, we can talk about the fact that Trevor Bauer is also pitching on Sunday. So I don't know if he's going to convince, he had to convince the Indians and the AL manager to pitch. But I'm going to be interested to see if he does that, but... what do you think about the Indians sending 5? Ramirez is the only starter. Lindor is not starting. He's behind Manny Machado, but that's not bad to have one of the most. They're tied with the most sending with the Red Sox and Astros. So go Indians.
I think it's funny that they also, it's also like all their good players. Like everyone else is having a relatively subpar. That's not true. There's a couple pretty good players on the team, but nah, it's super cool. I mean, I think Bauer especially is the most exciting one because he was of those 4, 5 of five. Those 5.
1, 2, 5.
Who am I not? Oh, Brantley, of course. He was the one probably except for Lindor, who was the most heralded and he was the top draft pick and all that. He was a higher draft pick than Lindor was too. Wasn't Lindor like 8th or 12th or something like that? Because he was a high school kid. But it's been neat to see him build himself into this, and he's so open about it. Like just in his methods for of how he trains and learns how to pitch and all that stuff like that. So it's neat to see that obviously talent is a major part of it, but also just all this hard work can actually pay off in a very tangible sense because he's having an incredible year. You know, I think I wrote about it earlier this year. I mentioned how by several metrics, he's a hair better than Kluber is, which... Again,
which is crazy.
He probably is much better now because Kluber had that. Yeah, Kluber had that stinky week and a half too, which has kind of muddled things a little bit lately. But no, it's super. I think Bauer is my happiest pick. But
yeah,
of all of them, Brantley's. You know, that's cool. It's always good to see his face there. I keep on checking out like wins above replacement boards, and I keep on seeing Jose Ramirez second in all of baseball though. Which every time I see that, it blows my mind. Like I know it, I see it, and I see him just abusing baseballs, but. Jesus, he is the best normal human being player in baseball is an Indian right now. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it seemed like for a long time nobody had recognized Francisco Lindor. Now they all recognize him. And then there's Jose Ramirez, who they also have to recognize. Yeah, and then Ramirez is starting. And I wonder if he would have beat out Machado if he was a third baseman, just based on name recognition, because Machado always freaking makes it.
I mean, I know he does have the home run lead. I don't know. I mean, that's the only thing I can think to. It's definitely helping. I don't know. Maybe it's because the third base class is a little weaker. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's really bad, but I just wonder if, because Machado, the only reason Lindor isn't there is because he's playing shortstop, even though he's not good at it. But but if he was at third, I do wonder if Ramirez would still have enough to beat him. I think that'd be an interesting race. I don't think there was any real, or no, we both thought Lindor would beat Machado at shortstop, didn't we?
But of course we did, because we respect actual talent. But, you know, what idiots are we to expect such a silly thing? What was the vote count? I mean, did Machado just get more votes than everyone else, too?
I don't think it was more than everybody, like more than all the other shortstops, but I don't know the exact count.
No, I mean, that's what I mean. I just don't know if he also beat out Ramirez in terms of the votes as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Right.
I am kind of sad there is no
true. Tell, I didn't really pay that much attention. So.
Oh, I don't either, but it's nice when they come out. I try not to get to, like, too upset about anything, but it's weird there's no, like, there's not even a slight snub this year, because like you said, it's these five are really good, and then nobody else is an all-star, is a nice way to put it. I think Clevenger's pretty close, but...
There's just so much good pitching now, it's absurd to even consider. Plus, you have to have a certain amount of relievers, too. So, I mean, yeah, he's good, but he's probably the 20th best pitcher in baseball, which is cool, but also, like, fair, you know? So
yeah. Well, I mean, that's... If you consider every team has a really good pitcher, that's not too bad. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. So, and again, you have since you have to include the relief pitchers, it's already in the past, like back in the 90s and whatnot, it would be all starting pitchers. But
I think this is
no more, Matthew.
I think it's surprising that oh man, I had this fun fact, but I just realized it's wrong. I said it was the first pair of starting pitchers since CeCe Sabathia and Jake Westbrook, but didn't Salazar and Kluber both go together?
That would have been 2000. That would have been last year, right?
No, the year before that.
No, last.
No, two. Yeah, 2 years ago, Salazar and Kluber. Okay, before that, it was Sabathia and Westbrook, because Carrasco's never made it yet.
Yeah, how did Jake Westbrook make a
All-Star team? I think we've talked about that before. He's one who I always think is so good, but he was actually not that great.
He was just such a mediocre pitcher. He was just he was everything a man named Jake Westbrook would be as a pitcher, and whatever that means to you, I don't know, but it sounded right as I said it. So
it's kind of surprising that Cliff Lee didn't make one either until he made one in 2008. That was it.
Didn't he have some kind of, like, I don't know, he had a couple like mid three ERA seasons, didn't he, like in like 05 or 06 or something like that?
There
was promise there, like that whole 08 season didn't come out of nowhere. It was just very surprising.
Yeah, he did. He had a couple. I'm looking now. He had well, no, not really. Yeah, 2005 was kind of good. 2007 was atrocious. 2008 was bad. And then he just, like, took off with the Phillies. One of those all-stars, that is. Trevor Bauer had a really interesting interview with Jeff Passan. It was kind of a weird interview. They were just sitting. Trevor Bauer joked that they were in a bathroom, but they were actually in, I guess, a haircut place. I think it was in Progressive Field, because Jeff asked him if he ever got his haircut there, and he said no. But they had a really in-depth, very Trevor Bauer interview. We learned that Trevor Bauer loves Kobe Bryant. he puts aside all kinds of things to be what he calls the best at baseball. He's just a really weird, interesting guy. And it was a really nice interview to hear that it wasn't just some canned interview answer. It was just Jeff Passan sit down and talk with him. And Trevor Bauer mentioned again that he thinks Tommy John surgery is performance enhancing, and it was all kinds of fun, which is interesting because Passan wrote the book about Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
And so that was neat. He didn't really push back on it, so maybe he kind of agrees. But what did you think of that interview?
My favorite part was when he was like, you know, and a lot of guys have family or whatever that's very important to them. He just kind of trailed up, like, I guess it's the most important thing you can do as a human being or whatever.
That one felt like a canned response. Like,
yeah, exactly. You know, he's like, I should probably say this. No, I thought it was, I'm just a little, I mean, a couple times he wouldn't name names as far as like people who, I don't know, guys who, a couple of Tommy John guys who were like, now I can't even remember. But anyway, no, I liked it a lot. It was very, I didn't listen to the whole thing. Admittedly, I had to do a lot of work today. But it was very informative, and I just love how granular he gets about it. because that's why, again, going back to what I was saying about seeing him so visibly grow into the pitcher he's become, this is why it's so cool to see him make the All-Star team, because he's been so open about literally every step he's taken in, you know, in his career with, like, not even like with the media. He's kind of shunned the media a little bit, but just online and, you know, like posting his entire workout videos and his pitch design sessions and all that and things like that. And I just love that. Yeah, I always talk about things in baseball.
And you like that really bad. Hold on. You have to go back to when you said, I love something.
I love a lot of things, but I love all the little granular things. And just guys talking about like the little things in baseball making a difference. And this is exactly what that is. It's the, you know, the time in the off season and the figuring out how to make your mechanics so perfect and, you know, the actualizing all the little bits of ability you have. So no, it's, that was really neat. Again, he's a very cerebral guy. You can tell at times, like, it almost felt like he didn't want to be talking to him, but, and there was definitely a lot of stuff kind of left in the air, I guess, in terms of, like, he didn't want to open up too much and tell kind of behind the scenes stuff, which is too bad, but, you know, you can't have everything.
I don't know if Jeff said anywhere, but I'd be really interested to know where that interview came from. Like, if he went up to Trevor and asked, or Trevor said, hey, I want somebody to talk to you about this, and Jeff, you seem like the guy, so I think that'd be really interesting. So to paraphrase what Trevor said about not having family weighing him down for baseball, like the fact that he just called his residence in Texas because he's never there, but he basically said that there's people willing to work harder, understand concepts, and more athletic than me, but no one does it across the board. So what he's saying is that, like, nobody's, I guess, like a jack of all trades kind of thing. Like, he understands everything. He's got time to work on everything. And he's going to work extremely hard at it, which I guess so far, like, you can't really argue with any of it without how well it's worked.
There was a whole part we were talking about. I think it was an excellent point. Like, why is it that pitchers are supposed to break down and what is ostensibly their athletic prime? And, you know, the argument that, oh, wear and tear in the arm, that does seem a little bit, I don't know, maybe, I guess so. But the logic is there, I guess. Again, it's a very Trevor Bauer answer to something. Like, why would I get worse if I'm getting stronger? It doesn't make any sense to me. And I'm like, oh, that's logical, I suppose. But, I mean, I'm throwing a baseball isn't a very, you know, to use his own word, biomechanically proper movement. So I don't know.
Yeah, I do like when Jeff said, well, what about running backs? And there was a pause, and Trevor went, no, that's wrong. Jeff had a point. Yeah, like,
obviously, getting into a car accident, you know, eight times, you know, or 20 times a day, that's definitely going to, you know, slow down your ability to stay in peak physical condition. But
yeah,
what about quarterbacks? You know, there's that guy up in New England who's, you know, 65 years old now, and he's the best player in football still.
Yeah,
hockey player. You know, Jaromir Jagr is still playing hockey. He's like 60. Julio Franco is still playing baseball somewhere. I don't know where, but he's out there.
Yeah, I do want if – so like this Trevor – I wonder if there could be a Trevor Bauer in another sport because of that. Because baseball is all like you can build yourself basically and not worry about getting into a car accident eight times a game. So like in other sports, you have so many different variables. So I wonder if there could be a Trevor Bauer. Like if he really applied himself to football or basketball in high school – and went that route instead, I wonder if he'd be doing this all the same kind of stuff, or maybe that's the reason he was attracted to pitching early, because he realized he could do all the stuff on his own and control so many variables and change so much. Which everything he says makes so much sense.
Like the only sport. Right. And like the only sport I could think it would work with would be a golf. Or, I don't know if you could really Trevor Bauer your way to, you know, to coin a verb, I guess, into hockey. Because apparently, I don't know.
It seems like all the sports are moving towards,
I guess. I'm not really sure.
Like learning the isolation stats. Like hockey does it. They try to isolate as much as possible. Basketball does it. I think football, right. there's so few games you can just scout with the eye and get most stuff. But all these other sports are seeing the kind of analytics you can do with baseball and trying to do it with other sports. I also like that Trevor said he wanted, what was like, 6 or 7 slow motion cameras on every play, which is a very good point that why are these places all absolutely wired with, like you do it in the World Series, all these slow motion cameras. If you're a team, you'd probably want those on literally everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because like he's doing with pitches, he could learn to do anything with just watching everything in slow motion.
And like you said, it does show you, you know, you can literally break down the biomechanics of a pitcher and see how a guy gets worse at 45 or 50 pitches and why that happened. You know, I don't know. I follow the guy he trains with at Driveline, Kyle Boddy. I follow him on Twitter, and he's often talking about how so many other areas of baseball are way ahead of the major leagues just because of whatever reason. I don't know. I mean, like Oregon State baseball is maybe the most forward-thinking baseball organization in America, or Vanderbilt University as far as pitching. You know, so because they. I don't know. I don't really have an explanation as to why, but it's just baseball in the major league seems to be stuck no matter what they do in everything happening 20 years ago. And that's why Trevor Bauer was such a he was mocked as a young player for his different view of how to do things. And that's kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, do you remember what
he was just how stuck in the game? Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember when he was throwing the ball really far and we thought that was so weird? Or not weird, yeah, but like I mean, everybody like, in Arizona thought that was just the most bizarre thing in the world.
Again, like that was totally a thing that used to be done back in the old days too. Like guys did long toss and they threw the ball. Like that's how you, like there were pitching coaches from back in the old days and that's how they kept their pitchers healthy was by throwing the ball because that's their job is to throw a ball. So. Why not throw the ball more and far?
And one of the other things he talked about was what he's going to do when he's a free agent, which he sort of talked about this before a little while ago, that he's only going to sign one-year contracts. I guess, I'm assuming as long as he can find one, he's going to take it, which is a really interesting idea, obviously, because nobody wants to do that. Most people want the security of being in one place for so long. But, of course, Trevor doesn't have a family or a home that he cares about, so he's willing to play anywhere for a year and just travel and keep doing it. So, and he said he's got a bet going with a friend. He's going to get shot in the nuts with a paintball gun if he doesn't do it one time, which I wouldn't be surprised if that's Kyle Boddy, first of all. And second of all, I want to see that if he ends up signing a two-year deal somewhere. Knowing Trevor, that will definitely be streamed or recorded and posted. So it's sort of... I guess other sports have done that again, like Kevin Durant and LeBron James always take these 1 or 2 year deals, except, I mean, LeBron took a 4 year deal in LA, but those all have salary caps. When you don't have a cap, people just kind of go for the massive contracts and the one time they can. But it's interesting that Trevor Bauer wants to do just a 1 year deal everywhere. I think that's a really neat idea.
And then I wrote about that this past winter. When I was hoping the Indians would sign JD Martinez, signed him to a very large but short deal. And like it's a thing that works well for farm market teams, and it could work well for players too. Like, because how big would that 1 year deal be too? You know, like it's not like he would just sign it for $15 million. He'd sign like a $40 million 1 year deal. And I mean that's a surprisingly attractive idea for a lot of teams, in addition to the player, because if it doesn't work out, then you're out from under it. And if it does work out, then you have one of the best pitchers in baseball for a year. And you might have the option of signing him to another year contract because you've shown him all the things that you can provide him. So,
yeah,
for some guys, obviously the long-term deal is useful because whether, like you said, they have family or they may come from a less privileged background. I mean, say what you will about Trevor Bauer. Seems to me like he came from a pretty, pretty good, he was raised in a pretty wealthy family and stuff like that. Like, I know he went to UCLA on a scholarship, but I just don't think he came from destitute situations I don't know, like Jose Ramirez, I'm sure did not come from the most pristine place in the world, that small town in the Dominican Republic, you know, so he signed that what is an amazing deal for the team and is highway robbery for the player.
Yeah.
But,
I wonder if there's a chance we're going to start seeing less of that too. Like less of the Jose Ramirez contracts and more of like the one or two Trevor Bauer deals. I mean, as much as I like the idea for Trevor Bauer, I kind of don't like that because I like having players stay with teams selfishly.
Right. No, of course. And obviously teams like that too. Like a team like the Indians has survived for the last 25 years or so using that exact tactic. But I mean, it's not just pitchers who can use the techniques of personal development that Trevor Bauer used. It's a thing hitters can do as well. It's a thing that they can figure out how to, you know, actualize their own ability without having to lean on the club structure to do it. And as we said before, the club structure is somewhat antiquated in how it's done. So, I mean, like you look at Francisco Lindor. He hasn't signed a long-term deal yet. I mean, he's betting on himself a little bit, and he's already made himself probably another $80 million or $100 million this year.
Oh, yeah.
Like his next contract is going to be massive. they already offered him $100-some odd million before last year.
Yeah.
And then he was amazing, and he's even better. He's on track for like 9 wins above replacement for someone this year. He's on track to have one of the great shortstop seasons of all time, like one of the great Indian seasons of all time, no less. Like, period, of any hitter, not named like Jim Tomey or Albert Bell, but that's saying something. So, that is a good question. Are we going to see more guys just kind of bet on themselves for 1 year huge payday deal? Because that's kind of the deal JD Martinez signed too. If you look at it, it's essentially a 2 year with like 3 option years too, and they're all just, you know, big AAV stuff like that. So,
yeah, we've kind of seen that. Like,
it's definitely an idea.
The dipping the toe in the water, where they do like 2 years and they have their own opt out. Most of the time they do it if they're great, right? And they'd like overplay their contract. But I do wonder if we see, so if this works out for Bauer, if he does it a couple times and then more players are interested, it's only a matter of time before we have a team that like tries to build a team with just those players, right? Like even somebody like the Indians who don't make a ton of money, they could just sign a bunch of players for 1 year and know that inflated budget is going to be there forever, and then win a World Series and dump everybody. Well, they don't have to dump everybody.
Yeah, it's called the 1997. It's called the 1997 Florida Marlins.
There you go.
Right, it's doable. Definitely, it's frustrating. We hate it, but it's doable.
Yeah, and so the only thing with Bauer, I wondered. I've never seen him talk about like if he values scouting at all. Am I just missing that? Or I'd really want to see. I know that like Kyle Boddy, whenever somebody mentions Trevor Bauer, he usually reads or listens to it. So if Kyle listens to this, I hope he mentions it to Trevor. I'd like to know like his thoughts on scouting. Does he think it doesn't really matter? Like it's really, or not that it doesn't matter, but it's really simplistic as far as get this pitch where it's supposed to be against this guy, so there's not a whole lot to it. But for all that Trevor Bauer applies to like personal training and like that kind of stuff, I'd love to see or hear what his thoughts are on the other side of it, which is all the advanced scouting and like looking at the other players and how to beat him. Because it seems like all this stuff that he does is just about building up his own pitches, not about how to beat anybody specifically. So, although I guess maybe that goes along with
that. And that's
the what?
Well, I was going to say, I guess probably that's what I was going to do. He just works on throwing his bet. Why go after someone's weakness when they said you can use your own strength, I guess. And then that's kind of how I envision most top flight pitchers work too. You know, like why? That's why Corey Kluber throws so many curveballs now. Is why throw not your best pitch when you can throw your best pitch? So I wonder. I wonder if it's more of a thing that helps hitters because their entire existence is reaction, or even defense and things like that. But that's a very good question. That's a good question. So I didn't even think about.
Like anything we can get out of Trevor Bauer to know what he thinks about it. Well, most. What baseball related things we can get him to talk about, I am all for hearing what he has to say. I think that'd be really neat.
Oh, exactly. I mean, no other players are that open, too, is the thing. You know, like it's guys just don't, like it's just the nature of baseball is so like closed mouth. And having someone who's so open about the entire process of everything is very refreshing.
Right. So one of the other players, He sort of played last year a little bit for the Indians. He has a chance to be, a really good hitter, I guess, somewhere. Francisco Mejia came up for the Indians as a catcher. He's recently played some outfield. He did try third base a little bit. But as we're learning more and more, he really does not want to be anything but a catcher. Terry Francona's kind of hinted at this over the year. Well, not so much as hinted as, like, said it, but you could maybe interpret it as something else if you really wanted to. But I wrote about it last week that it was kind of suspicious about what was happening. And then they actually asked Tito during a pregame thing. I doubt it had to do with what I wrote, but maybe it was just a coincidence. But I mean,
Francona, like, what are you talking about?
Francona, like, flat out said it. Like, here's his quote. He really wants to be a catcher. I don't disagree with that, but I think we've had moments where his heart isn't in it as much as maybe it could be. He still views himself as a catcher, and we're trying to explain to her that, man, you could be a catcher next year, but you could be a starting right fielder now. So we're just not there yet. I mean, I understand it. It's just not the kind of – or I don't think it's kind of come as maybe as fast as we'd hoped. Holy cow. That's just calling out your top prospect at this point, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, right? That's the only way that there was no nuance.
Right. I feel like there was a little bit before, but it's gone now.
Right. No, exactly. Which, I mean, I don't understand it. It's not like the Indians don't need a catcher. I like Yan Gomes. He's having a league average, essentially, offensive season, and he's still a great catcher. But, I mean, the more we see Roberto Perez, the more exposed he becomes, the more terrible he becomes at the plate. So it's just they need more hitting. And I don't know. I mean, hell, I dealt with years and years of Victor Martinez behind the plate, and I think Francisco Mejia could probably be a better catcher on the catching side than him. I don't know. It's I understand his point of view because, again, what makes more money, a hitting catcher or a hitting right fielder?
Right.
Like, just hands down. So, I don't know.
Hey, it's really I forgot what I was going to say now. Something. Oh, well, so either the depressing answer is that Francona just loves Yan Gomes so much for no reason, so he doesn't want to bring Mejia up because he's younger. But there could also be the explanation that the Indians, like maybe as an organization, they together like just have so much advanced scouting on the impact the catchers have. Because Tito's always said like Roberto Perez and Yan Gomes, what they contribute is more than just at the plate. So, I mean, maybe the organization just knows something about what those two do to help the staff that they know. If they yank them out, the pitching's going to suffer, but that'd have to be a huge drop to not make it worth it to get a bat like Francisco Mejia in there every day, I'd think.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it is hard to quantify. Again, like, national announcers and TV guys rant and rave about Yadier Molina's impact on the game, and it can seem a little overboard, but it is hard to quantify the impact of a great catcher, right? It's they do a lot of things that you can't really put numbers to. We figured out sort of framing and things like that, and the arm, obviously, but there's a whole part to the game that is not in numbers. It's not really something that's easy to talk about because neither you or I are in the game. I never played catcher. I played left field badly when I was a kid.
You don't know what I did before I wrote for Let's Go Tribe. You don't know that.
Well, it's... That's true. I don't know. For all I know, you could actually be, I don't know,
I'm Jeff actually
Stillmauer or something. Oh, yeah. Hello. Okay. But I mean, and so I can understand the impact of someone like of having a great catcher and not wanting to lose that. Because, again, it's a vital role. They're involved in literally every single play made, like, in some way or other, whether it's just calling the pitch or lining up a defense or things like that. These are all things that you can't really do from the dugout. You need someone on the field to help you do it. So.
Yeah.
I haven't really thought or paid attention to the impact of a young catcher coming on versus like an older catcher. But I'm just trying to think back to like when Gomes got hurt in 2016. Well, it was 2016, yeah, because Perez became the full-time catcher.
The team survived.
The team did survive, but didn't, like, Kluber have a run of, like, bad starts in, like, May or something like that?
That huge winning streak, too, so.
Right, right, exactly. So that all evened out eventually, but you know, again, a comfort level of the pitcher and things like that, and especially the amount, maybe it wouldn't matter so much now, but, like, there was a lot of young pitchers on the team then, like, Bauer was younger and Clevinger was still getting going and things like that. So having a consistent voice behind the plate might be helpful. And these are things that Francisco Mejia simply does not have. Like, he has no rapport with any of these guys because he's never spent any time around them. And like, and we were both talking before about whether or not a great pitcher really cares about scouting, but if they do, a part of that scouting and the discussion is with the catcher too. So there's a lot of work in that, on that side of things too. And how great is Francisco Mejia's bat anyway? I mean, he's very streaky. I don't know. I'm not going to see your dog him up. So maybe he just likes catching. Maybe he finds it more fun than playing right field. I mean, I can understand that. Outfield's kind of boring. You just stand there until the ball is hit near you, as opposed to being involved in everything.
So. Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
He wants to be part of the team. You know, he doesn't want to be that guy out on the lawn somewhere.
Not the kid in the field just picking grass. That was me and T-ball.
Right, exactly. Sitting into himself, eating grass, lying down, falling asleep, getting yelled at by the coach. These are all things that could happen to you too in the outfield.
Yeah, and the fact that he's playing outfield like now, I've never thought that was... Everyone always points to that and say, oh, clearly he wants to play outfield. He's out there now. I think it's he could very easily be saying, fine, I'll do it now, but I'm not going to do it in the majors. I don't think that's a big leap to make.
Right.
Like, he's played a lot of outfield for the Columbus Clippers now, but if they were if he was going to come up and play right field for the Indians, I'm almost positive they would have called him up at this point. Like, yeah, if he was willing to play it every day.
No, and then like again, maybe this is a like the manager's like, I'm playing you in the right field, or I won't play you at all. And which choice do you know? Like which would you rather do? Because right. you're putting somewhere else, someone else at catcher. It's kind of a screwed up thing to do if you ask me.
But, oh yeah, definitely. And it doesn't help the Indians either, because if they're going to just trade him, like this is doing nothing to help them. The only way this could be good for the Indians is if they're using it as motivation, but I don't know how this motivates Francisco Mejia.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all. Like, we're just not going to play you then. Like, well, how? Who is this helping? You're reducing development time, and you're also making your top prospect mad.
Yeah.
I mean, not that he can do anything about it. He's stuck there until they call him up, but
yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't like it. I mean, again, I've written how many articles already in this year just about how they need more bats. He is one. Have him hit. Figure out a place for him. But again, if it's not right field. Maybe catcher. I don't know.
Yeah.
Catcher, somewhere else. Shortstop?
There you go. Just why not? We don't have a shortstop. We need him there.
I move him to second. It's fine. It'll be fine.
So one of those bats the Indians did have, you wrote about him last week, is Lonnie Chisenhall. Him and those damn Cavs.
What time?
he's out again. Did you write that before or after he was going to be gone for significantly? I can't remember.
I think it was
after.
As it was happening.
Yeah. So he's gone for significant time is in the quotes. And I believe this is his last year under contract, right? So this might be...
No, I don't think so.
Is it? I'm pretty sure. Or unless they have an option on him or something, because he's been here forever. No, he's unrestricted after this year. So is this the end of Lonnie Chisenhall in Cleveland, you think?
Son of a...
right after you wrote a glowing review of how he's done in Cleveland. And if this is, like, what is his legacy as an Indian?
It's what could have been, right? I mean, I read the article. He's turned into a very good hitter. He's turning into the hitter basically that everyone expected him to be. You know, a good line drive, gap-to-gap kind of a guy who's not going to blow you away at the plate, but he's going to definitely comport himself well and be an above average bat. I think it's definitely a talent realized. It's just not a ceiling realized. Because again, his legs kept on collapsing.
Yeah, I think he might have been over platooned at some points in his career. Like he can hit fine against lefties, I think. Against lefties. So I think that sort of hurt him a little bit. But
he got much better at it.
Yeah, I
think that's what he was terrible at it, but he got much, much better at it. And I mean, the sample sizes aren't huge. But over the last, 2 years or so, I think the numbers I was looking at was he was a good hitter. Like he was just an all around good hitter. And he's going to leave too. Everyone's leaving, Matt.
I know. It's going to get scary over the next couple of years, which is why they need like Mejia and a couple others to stay around unless they are absolutely going to win this year. I mean, the window's not slamming shut or anything. They still have a great staff, but there's going to be some changes rolling around.
The pitching's still there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I know.
So with that in mind,
finally we'll get the Yandy Diaz experience. Finally, it's happening.
Yeah, remember that guy? Remember that Yandy Diaz guy?
I think about him and Cody Anderson every now and again. And I go, what? Remember those days? Those are good days.
Remember biceps and the sweaty guy? I remember them. I miss them.
We all remember. We all think about it all the time still. So yeah.
So part of the reason the Indians, it's been kind of a weird season. They don't seem to have much urgency to do a whole lot. It's because the AL Central is just downright awful. Mark Normand done an SB Nation wrote about it today. It's got to be one of the worst divisions almost ever. Close maybe. The Royals are gonna lose 100 games. The Tigers are gonna be awful. The White Sox are awful. The Twins are surprisingly bad. I thought for sure they would at least be one to give the Indians a run for it, but they might even be selling at the deadline. So then you have the Indians winning. They're still not one of the best division winners. I think the Diamondbacks finally lost more games than them, but maybe they've taken it back as the worst division leader. But they're still up by 9.5 games, which is ridiculous. Huh. So I kind of wish the AL Central was better, which is a weird thing to say. At least give me one team to compete with. Because this season has just been a constant wait for the postseason. And if the Indians get knocked out early, this has been a waste of my life for 6 months. This, like, there's no drama at all.
I wrote about that a couple weeks ago. Yeah. Like, I just wrote, this is boring. It's kind of boring baseball. The team itself is fun enough, but most of the games have no stakes. Like, this week they're playing Cincinnati, and I want them to beat Cincinnati because of my irrational love of the Ohio Cup, even though I'd never lived in Ohio a day in my life. And they're playing the Yankees at the end of the week. Like, that has no bearing on anything. I mean, obviously there's home field advantage and stuff for the playoffs, but they're not catching the Astros. They're not catching the Red Sox. They're, what, 11 games or something behind each one of those. So there's just nothing here. There's no, I guess in a sense, it teaches us to just appreciate the game itself, right? Like, there's a zen to that, I suppose.
You are really digging for something fun right here, aren't you?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. I mean, you know, again, this is a perfect summer to spend a lot of time listening to the radio rather than watching the game. Because you can be outside doing something else. And, like, the games have no bearing. For some reason, Eddie Rosario turned into a god when he faces the end. Like, there's these weird things that are happening, but at the end of the day, they have no, like, impact on the season as a whole.
Yeah.
So.
I think you are right. It's
a little bit boring.
It's usually these kind of seasons are when you're like the Royals, where it doesn't really matter, so you're losing everything. But it is kind of a new, I don't even know if it's interesting, but it's new that it's, they're going to go to the playoffs, so we can just sort of relax and not be stressed out the whole season. Part of that's fun, but, like, part of the fun is being stressed out every game. So I do kind of miss it, but.
Also, yeah. I'm trying to find things to write about here. All right.
There are some people who have to write every single day, and it's kind of hard.
Try to dig up something here. Like, how many articles? I'm going to literally write an article this week about how Jose Ramirez is pulling the ball a lot. Spoiler, he's pulling the ball a lot. That's something, I guess. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, there's something. It's because at least when you have, like, division races, there's really tight things to talk about and implications for everything, but there's nothing. It's just, here's how hard Francisco Lindor is hitting the ball. And that's, like, the other problem.
Yeah.
There's these five really great players, and everybody else is sort of, and the bullpen is a mess. How many times can you write about that? At least, like, when Andrew Miller comes back, we'll have something, I guess.
It's a perfect storm. It's a boring division with a team that every now and again just punches you in the gut because they blow up, like, a seven shutout innings by your ace, say, just to pick at something out of the air at random.
At random, totally random.
And then players that you had big high hopes for are injured all the time. Like Bradley Zimmer, still not on, you know, either hurt or back down in Columbus. I mean, yeah, we have the whole Shane Bieber thing going on, which is super cool, by the way. Again, they're pulling their pitcher out of their ass. I don't think I can get another article about them pulling pitchers out of their ass for another month or so. But look for that in August.
It was fun the first couple times, finding a Jeff Manship, Dan Otero, but I'm done now. I just want a consistent bullpen.
I mean, yeah, I'm excited. Neil Ramirez is good, but he's every now and again, he just lays a big old egg there. And he goes, oh, God. That's right. That's why Neil Ramirez.
So every Monday.
Maybe we start thinking about Ben again. I hate this. I hate this so much.
You love talking about this. You've had to at least, like, have maybe close to a dozen posts about the bullpen. It's got to be up there.
Without a doubt. I wrote about Cody Allen a few weeks ago. I've done a Zach McAllister piece this year.
Ooh,
I think I have.
That's rough.
I think it's time again. Oh, yes. I wrote last year about how he could replace Brian Shaw. That was stupid.
So every Monday, we ask you guys on Twitter, Facebook, maybe other places I don't know about, to ask for social media questions. You guys send them in. We answer them occasionally.
Intellectual dark. Is that where you find these questions? Is that where you find these questions, Matt?
The intellectual dark web? Is that what you said?
Intellectual dark web, yeah.
Yeah, that's where I go.
Place.
I go on the Silk Road and ask for these questions. Yeah. So the first one is at MDGolf13. He wants to ask, will the Tribe ever stop playing with 24 major leaguers and release Josh Tomlin? First of all, harsh. Second of all, not entirely false. I mean, he's really bad. He's bad everywhere. I never thought why people thought, oh, just put him in the bullpen. He'll be good. I think he's given up a home run.
Do what?
That's a real thing people thought because he throws strikes and apparently that's good. good enough. Are they going to release him at any time? I'd be shocked if he's on the playoff roster.
So, but I don't know about release. Was it over the winter that I wrote that article where I played MLB The Show and had him throw only curveballs?
Yes, it was. That was the doldrums of winter.
Yeah. I love that article. anyway, that is, well, I think that was my idle hope when they moved to the bullpen. Like, well, he could just chuck only curveballs. See how that works. Maybe it won't. I don't know, but maybe it could become something. You know, I mean, curveballs are hard to hit. They curve. Yeah, I still don't get it. He's so bad. This is absurd to me. This is one of those, you know, I've always kind of, like, people have written about, like, nepotism and stuff when it comes to Francona and the guys that he keeps around. And I always kind of half laugh at it because, like, yeah, I mean, I don't think any player, any coach or manager would actually do that and you know, restrict his chances of winning. But then this happens, and John Tomlin is still on the roster. Now, here's the real question. Who is he blocking from being on the roster instead?
Literally anybody. I don't care.
Fair answer. But who? Like George Kontos? Ben
go.
Taylor? Marshall? He's on the DL. I'm just going over the list, the long list of... Mark Cinci on the team again? That's right, he is.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Shit.
He's awful. I'd rather see Ben Taylor tried out there than Josh Tomlin. I don't know what I'm going to get from Ben Taylor. I know what I'm going to get from Josh Tomlin almost every outing at this point. It's
true,
real bad.
True. I mean, it's the known knowns and the known unknowns and all that stuff. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Brandon Guyer listed as a relief pitcher.
There you go.
It doesn't make any sense. It's a question I think we all wonder every time he walks out there. Because why? What is he doing? Retire and become a bench coach.
And it always requires the prerequisite that he's a great guy. Love him. Thanks for 2016, but you got to be done.
Yeah, whatever. Go coach the Lake County Captains or something. I don't know. God damn.
So at Valen CIC underscore, an underscore is important, don't forget that. He wants to know, the Indians love a cheeky homecoming. Lofton in 07, Tomey in 11, Coco Crisp 2016, Joe Smith 2017, to name a few. Of this year's I'm Coming Home candidates, which is more likely to come back? Shin Chu Chu or as Drubal Cabrera? Any dark horse options? Maybe Austin Jackson? It's kind of weird that Chu and as Drubal, if they could play defense literally anywhere, they'd be pretty great additions. Chu can still get on base like crazy. He just can't play the outfield. Cabrera's shown some power this year, but he can't play anything, as we know. So either of those, do you think there's any chance they come back, or do you see anybody else maybe making a return? I like the idea of this question, that the Indians love bringing these players that have been there. And...
Right. And I was eyeballing Chu the other day for an article. I was like, that'd be kind of fun. Then I realized, yeah, where do you play him? Nowhere. Like, there's no space for him anywhere. It's a simple fact. Mm-hmm. Cabrera, I got the sense that there was some sort of bad blood when he left. I don't know why I got that sense, but I just did. Remember Orlando Cabrera? Remember when he was on the team?
I do, Sam.
Just an idle thought about that. Yeah, that was interesting. But, yeah. I mean, I guess you could play Cabrera at second, but I think he's always said he'll never play second base.
Yeah, wasn't that a thing the Mets wanted him to do for the longest time, but he refused?
Right, yeah, and he was just like, no, just blood out, no. So, I guess. Because like, where else do you play him? You can't play him in the outfield, obviously. The only three positions where you can play him at this point are full of all-stars. And everywhere else is terrible. I like the Austin Jackson idea, actually, because he's where? In San Francisco?
Right. He's in San Francisco.
Right. How is he doing? I have not even thought about the San Francisco Giants. They have a winning record.
He's pretty bad.
He's pretty good.
I mean, the Giants are fine, but he's bad. I mean, I don't think he's coming back. He had a great season last year. That was a really good season for Austin Jackson, but now he's not good again.
No, it really was. It was amazing. What's the deal with Andrew McCutcheon? Is he like on a, what kind of contract is he on?
I don't know. He's with the Giants, though. But I think we kind of had the homecomings with Rajai Davis Andrew and Mike Napoli already, right?
I got to write an article with Andrew McCutcheon. Yes, it's happening. Okay, anyway.
I mean,
maybe the Austin Jackson thing, maybe. He's good.
Yeah.
But
Davis and Napoli already had the comeback things, and they haven't worked out too great. I mean, Napoli, he's just sitting in AAA, and Rajai Davis can't hit. Yeah. So I don't know. Between those two, I guess is Drupal, like you said, just because he can sort of play somewhere if you can convince him to. But I would love to have Chu back. He's one of my favorite like ex-Indians that are still playing. But there's just no way to put him. You can't put him in right field anymore.
I mean, he was awesome. He was awesome on such bad teams too. Yeah. Like he was just such a good, underrated player. He got such a huge contract that he totally deserved. And he brought Trevor Bauer back, which is fun too.
Yeah. Yeah, never forget the Diamondbacks traded him for Didi Gregorius. That's always funny to me.
Who's now? And none of those players. Yeah, and now none of those players are good, and none of them are on the Diamondbacks. Yeah. Good job. Who was Kevin Towers? Yeah, it was.
So at James E. Powell, he wants to know your bullpen hopes, dreams, and realistic options. I got my hopes and dreams for this one have always been just get two of any of the Padres relievers, Brad Hands, Kirby Yates. I'm good. That's what I want.
I mean, I've talked briefly about getting Zach Britton on the cheap. The Reds have a couple of good relievers, don't they? They have the guy with the weird name, and yeah, Raciel Iglesias is very good. Amir Garrett, maybe. Again, these are all guys. Garrett Hughes had a pretty good year. I mean, Garrett Hughes is the kind of guy you kind of get and don't expect to keep for a very long time, because that's one of those pitchers who are having a great year, but you can't expect to be good again next year.
Yeah,
he's always been pretty good. So I don't know. That'd be an interesting pickup. But yeah, Brad Hand would be radical. Britton on the cheap. He's supposed to be healthier soon.
Yeah, Britton on the real cheap.
The guy I mentioned before. Yes.
I would love Britton really cheap.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think they should just get Brad Hand for a bag of baseballs.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? They should re-sign Jake Westbrook and trade him to the Padres again to get another good pitcher. Keep on doing that.
So here's a sort of related question from Zachary Kessler on Facebook. When will you fix the bullpen, Merritt? I think he thought we were the Indians, which happens a lot. He said, when will you fix the bullpen? He didn't name you. He just said, when will you fix the bullpen? Never.
What's his name? Zach? Never, Zach. Just to spite you. You will feel the pain that I have felt. I will never fix the bullpen. I love bad bullpen. It's every end of the game exciting. I don't like wins. Wins are passe. Losing is where it's at, man.
Losing late, nonetheless. You want to lose early.
Yeah.
You want to have some hope until the last second.
Seems assured. Blow the game. Just blow the whole thing. Yeah.
So our last question.
Maybe they could trade some relievers from the Brewer. They don't need them, right?
Nah, what are
they,
first place or something? They have the Cubs. They're not going to win that.
Yeah, exactly.
Our last question is Chris Zanin on Facebook. This one should be really easy. Is Shane Bieber a permanent rotation fixture? Yeah. I don't know where he's going.
Not bullpen.
Well, I mean, bullpen maybe this year, but... Right?
Stanford, Brad Hand.
That's not too crazy. Yeah, how about that? I've seen a lot of people say trade Shane Bieber for something. That seems crazy, right? Hell no. Don't trade Shane Bieber.
See, now, my only rationale to trade Shane Bieber is, again, who the hell was Shane Bieber a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, yeah, the one thing the Indians can do real well is make starting pitchers, apparently. So use that. And do it again and trade for Corey Knebel and Dan Jennings and Jeremy Jeffress and Jake, the entire bullpen from the Brewers, basically. Let me get that.
Are you more okay trading him or Tristan McKenzie if you had to trade one?
I'm more okay trading Shane Bieber. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's cool. I just like the fact that he's saying, you know, he can do something. Like, pitching prospects can be so far away without knowing it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, McKenzie as I said before, the Indians are really good at developing pitching, but I mean, the raw talent of Tristan McKenzie is absurd. And getting that combined with him turning into a great pitcher is, quite frankly, frightening. Like, yes. they had one guy come out of nowhere, Corey Kluber. They had one guy who was a top flight prospect who became great talent in Trevor Bauer. So these are the two pathways that both have been successful for them. Maybe I'm putting a little bit too much hope and expectation into their ability to make a pitcher, but what else do we have? What else do we have, Matt?
Nothing.
That's good hope. Hope dies last, as Doug Circle said. So
hope dies with your relievers.
Week. Yeah, hope Dr. Mel dies. Well, who pitches last? A reliever. So there you go. That's for Hope dies.
It checks
hope
out.
Hope dies in the bullpen.
All right, Mary, that's going to do it for this week, for our episode. I think part of it, I muted myself by accident for the recording, so I'm going to go back and try to re-record some stuff for myself. I think part of, like, okay, most of the Mejia conversation, I looked down like, oh, that's red. That's not good. So I'm gonna try to make it real smooth, but there might be a part where it cuts and it's like way better quality for 5 seconds.
Oh, great.
Anyway, that's going to be our show this week. Merritt, we'll talk to you next week.
Don't edit out the part where my cat jumped on me. I'll talk to you next week.